There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
One, all the world's a stage, all the world's an agenda. The story of, it's a woman's choice. Two, middle schoolers charge with using the incorrect pronouns. Three, the biggest stories of the week, from a shooting in Buffalo to the funding of a war in Ukraine. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. As always, I hope you will download, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your audio entertainment, Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. You can also watch the Will Cain Podcast on YouTube and Rumble. You know how in an action movie, when our hero or anti-hero embarks on a dangerous adventure, he often records a message and leaves it behind for those he loves. He says, if you're watching this, I didn't make it. Well, my friends who I love, if you're watching this, I probably didn't make it. Or, in the alternative, I'm in ecstasy. I'm recording this on the Lord's Day. I'm recording this on Sunday. I'm also recording this on a day that we would call the day of Game 7. There are four Game 7s in the NBA and the NHL today. The Milwaukee Bucks are taking on the Boston Celtics in Game 7 of the NBA playoffs. The Pittsburgh Penguins and the New York Rangers are tied up in a Game 7 in the NHL playoffs. But the two games that matter to me, and the two games that dictate whether or not this is a hostage video post-afterlife or a celebratory video, are the Dallas Mavericks and the Phoenix Suns in a Game 7 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and the Dallas Stars and the Calgary Flames in a Game 7 in the NHL playoffs at 9:30 Eastern Time. Agony or ecstasy, I'm up at 4 a.m. hosting Fox and Friends on Monday morning. So you will see whether or not this is agony or this is ecstasy live on television. Pray for me. It's been a while since we've hung out here on the Will Cain Podcast and just shared stories. I've got three big stories I want to talk about with you today. But before we dive in to the important news of the week, I want to dive into a story from the streets of New York. I want to dive into a story of my life that caught my curiosity. Yesterday, I was playing racquetball with a buddy of mine. That's just what I do. I've become an old man, and I spend at least several days of my week in the Northeast. That means I'm probably wearing goggles with socks pulled up to my knees, chasing a racquetball around some grimy YMCA. But afterwards, we decided, let's go get a beer. So we went and grabbed a beer. And as we sat there and ate wings and talked about the world, we noticed, as men will do when they're being honest, that the waitress was fairly attractive. And I've already run this by my wife, so I don't think I'm overstepping any bounds. I'm just sharing. I'm just being honest. We're just talking here, friends. And in the course of eating our wings and drinking our beer and noticing that this waitress was attractive, it was also very noticeable that she was wearing a mask. Yes, people still do that in New York City. I would currently put the percentages at about 20%, even outdoor on the street. You will see people masked. And I said to my friend, are we allowed? Can you say to someone, hey, can I see your face? It sounds so inappropriate. It sounds like you might be at a parade, like it might be Mardi Gras. And you have a fistful of beads you're ready to throw. But it's simply asking someone, hey, can I see your face? Is it creepy because I'm not single? Is it asking her to prove herself? I don't know, but I know it's super weird that here we are in 2022 in America, and it's weird if you're curious about someone's face. Don't you think that's weird? And because of that, my curiosity is off and running, and the social experiment is playing out in my mind. And I said to my friend, I just want to know now. Now I just want to know, is it offensive? Are you allowed to ask someone, can I see your face? Forget whether or not she's attractive. That's not the point anymore. I want to know if in 2022, if it's over the line to say, hey, might you reveal the major tool we as humans have used within civilization to communicate with each other non-verbally? And by the way, verbally as well, because we did ask her name. She gave the name. I heard Anthema. She said Angela. I'm blaming that on the mask. Angela. Anthema? Angela. Oh, Angela. There's a lot going into our communication beyond the words coming out of our mouth. And it's weird that we're at this point where we're covering up. At least a significant percentage of us in regions across the United States covering up half of our communication tool. So I had to play the experiment out. I had to ask, and for what it's worth, it wasn't creepy. She was flattered, and she did reveal her face. And it got me thinking on a more serious note about two different fascinating observations in world culture. First, here at home in the United States of America, I do think we're suffering from desensitization. Look, every single one of us, and unfortunately our children, are holding the most powerful devices outside of weapons of warfare in the history of civilization. We have a world of information at our fingertips at all times. And what that means is we have a world of obscenity. We have a world of pornography sitting right there at our fingertips at all times. Have you ever thought about what that does to the human brain? Have you ever thought about what that does to an adolescent's brain? You're feeding the most extreme and revealing and visions of idealism, images into people's brains at all times. I mean, take it even beyond pornography. You look at the way we dress in modern society. Look at the way I'm dressed with you right now. I'm wearing a t-shirt that says Dallas Mavericks across the front with the number 77, but I'm informal. I'm way more revealing. I'm giving you a little bit of a glimpse of the gun show right here, as opposed to whether or not you were watching some quote-unquote newscast 50 years ago. Walk down the streets of New York and people are going to be wearing fewer clothes than at any point in human history. Everywhere we go, we're being desensitized. And when you're desensitized, you have to ramp it up, man. You have to ramp up the extremity, the extremism. You have to ramp up the taboo to keep reaching for that next endorphin high. I know this is happening across our American civilization. There's studies on what this is doing to the brains of young men. And this is fascinating what it's doing to the relationships of people on the streets of New York City. And all of a sudden, you're in a situation where someone is covering half their face. I'm going to tell you something what's beyond weird to the point of interesting. It adds back allure. Forget COVID. This isn't about protecting microscopic particles from inhalation that the mask never accomplished. This is about adding back mystery. All of a sudden, it was, yes, mysterious as to whether or not this whole line of questioning would be considered offensive. And you can answer that question at Will Cain on Twitter. See Will Cain on Instagram. But it was also fascinating as to what lay beyond the mask. Mystery is good in life. Not everything should be just laid bare. We shouldn't be feeding the most extreme images into our brains anytime we want. It has a deleterious effect, I'm telling you, and I'm no prude. No prude at all, in fact. But I know the downside of drinking one too many beers in a night. I know the downside of having that one more glass of tequila. I know the downside of all the vices that I have chosen to participate in throughout life. It doesn't make me feel like I need to apologize or pretend that they have no cost. I know there's a cost to what not only are we tolerating, but we are indulging and encouraging in society today. In the end, I'm not advocating for us to put on masks, not to block COVID, but to add back mystery. But I am asking us to think about it. Think about what we're ingesting. Think about what we're seeing. Think about our relationships. Think about our way of communicating. And think about what it's doing to us individually and in aggregate. One more observation from the social experiment of the mask. Can you imagine living in Afghanistan and attempting to date somebody through a burqa? All you get to see is the eyes. Oh, she's beautiful. She's alluring. Look at her eyes. Can you imagine the roll of the dice? Take her home, propose, and then finally you find out what your wife looks like. And there's more to the world and more to life than beauty, but what a roll of the dice. How's the old ball and chain? Man, not what I thought. So it goes when maybe there's a little too much mystery. So it goes when maybe you should just be a little more aware of what can be revealed behind the mask. All right, story number one. All the world's a stage, all the world's an agenda. The story of It's a Woman's Choice. The White House put out a fascinating tweet this past week, a tweet that garnered some unexpected criticism. Joe Biden, from his official Twitter account, said the following. He said on Saturday, "Under my predecessor, the deficit increased every single year. This year, we're on track to cut the deficit by $1.5 trillion, the biggest one-year decline ever. It matters to families because reducing the deficit is one of the main ways we can ease inflationary pressures." The Biden administration bragging about cutting the deficit. In fact, cutting the deficit by $1.5 trillion, the biggest one-year decline in the deficit in American history, and a bigger cut in the deficit than ever accomplished under Donald Trump. But, as pointed out by a Twitter account entitled Neoliberal, "This is so silly. The deficit is decreasing because we're not doing pandemic aid anymore, and federal receipts are up because of inflation. Congress, or the Biden administration, didn't do anything to lower the deficit. In fact, if you look at the deficit over the last 10 years, what you will see is, yes, an increase in the deficit year by year. But going into the year 2020 with pandemic stimulus and stimulus checks, you see the deficit absolutely explode. And then in the year 2021, the Biden administration marginally decreases the deficit by $1.5 trillion. Now, that amounts to nothing when you look at this bar chart. It's still incredibly high compared to the large deficits we were running for the past decade. This earned the criticism of none other than Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, the owner of the Washington Post, tweeted back at the Biden administration, "In fact, the administration tried hard to inject even more stimulus into an already overheated economy, an inflationary economy, and only Joe Manchin saved them from themselves. Inflation is a regressive tax that hurts the least affluent. Misdirection doesn't help the country." Jeff Bezos pointing out the Biden administration is indulging in, well, a play. And playing with all the right words, manipulating the script. It's an incredibly powerful tool. Is language, is the script. And the Democratic Party and the left have become masters at manipulating that script. We've talked at times over the past several years here on the Will Cain podcast about the script and the language that has been altered. We've talked about court packing being something that has been manipulated to mean not increasing the number of justices, but increasing the number of conservative justices. The script has been manipulated when it comes to the word violence, where words have now become an emblem of violence. The script and the language manipulated to accomplish whatever it is you may like. It's as though the language and the script is only in service of the plot. And what is the plot? The plot is whatever the Democratic Party considers to be the most important things on their agenda. Language is script. Plot is agenda. I give you the issue of abortion. I give you the story of it's a woman's choice. The Democratic Party is now in the throes of literal street protests when it comes to the potential repeal of Roe v. Wade by the United States Supreme Court. And you're seeing Democratic leader after Democratic leader talk about what it means for women and what it should mean when it comes to policy. You have seen several Democratic politicians pressed, well, where would you draw the line on when abortion should be illegal? New York City Mayor Eric Adams was pressed on that just this past week by a reporter on the streets during a protest wherein he was asked directly, up to the point of birth, would you ever limit abortion? Here's what he had to say.
Mayor Adams, do you think there should be any limitation on abortions?
No, I do not.
Non-day of birth, totally fine?
No, I do not think. I think women should have a right to choose their bodies. Men should not have that right to choose how women should treat their bodies.
You heard there from Eric Adams, it's a woman's choice. That's the script. That's the language. It's a woman's choice. Let's listen to what he's saying literally for just one moment. He's saying he would make legal abortion up to the point of birth. 9 months in, third trimester, final day in, the child is set for birth, and Eric Adams responds to, should we allow this child to be aborted? Let's use precise language. Should we allow this child to be killed? Eric Adams' answer is, it's a woman's choice. That standard would put the United States of America in rare company. Rare company that I would suggest to you is not the one you might believe. It puts us on the enlightened path of progressivism, but puts us in rare company with the most totalitarian and evil regimes on this planet. Only countries like North Korea and China allow abortions up to the point of birth. I should amend that. Only countries like North Korea, China, and the United States of America's Democrat Party endorse abortion up to the point of birth. Is that really the script that reveals the inner morals of New York City Mayor Eric Adams? Here's what I tell you. I actually don't think so. I don't think Eric Adams is thinking. I think he's quivering. I think he's scared. I think he's looking for the ripcord on the conversation. I think he's looking for the escape hatch on the issue. I think he's saying, actually, don't hurt me. Please, don't hurt me. Don't vote me out of office. Don't consider me the bad guy. Don't lump me in with the wrong company. Don't hurt me. It's a woman's choice is not an argument. It's not a position. It's not a policy. It certainly isn't a point in time at which point abortion moves from moral to immoral. It's a woman's choice is a mantra. It's a plea. It's script. It's language. And you're hearing it over and over. Tim Ryan's running for Senate in Ohio. We've talked about this. He was pressed by Fox News Channel's Bret Baier on this exact same issue, lamenting the potential repeal of Roe v. Wade. Tim Ryan is pressed by Bret Baier. Well, then where would you draw the line? And no matter where Bret pushed, 12 weeks, 24 weeks, third trimester, the point of birth, Tim Ryan's answer was the same. It's a woman's choice. Just so we're clear, every country in Europe is more strict than what these Democrats are proposing. Almost every country in Europe is more strict than the Mississippi law that bans abortions before 15 weeks that led to the potential repeal of Roe v. Wade. Mississippi, more liberal than France. Mississippi, more liberal than Belgium, than Hungary, than Greece, than Germany. These are all countries where abortion is illegal after 12 weeks. France just changed their line from 12 weeks to 14 weeks and still remains more restrictive than Mississippi. And the Democrats in the United States of America are talking about aborting children at the point of birth. Ned Polis is the governor of Colorado. He had the temerity as well to appear on the Fox News channel. He was pressed by Shannon Bream on the very same issue. When would you draw the line? When should you make abortion illegal? Here's what the governor of Colorado said.
Even the New York Times noted in an article updated this May, the United States is one of just over a dozen countries that allow abortions for any reason beyond 15 weeks of pregnancy. The Times goes on to note that includes North Korea and China. Is that the company that Coloradans want to be in?
So this was on the ballot in Colorado just a year and a half ago, overwhelmingly rejected, banning third trimester abortions. And that's because, you know, people know how painstaking and difficult that is. When you know that, you know, you might be near birth and you find out your baby doesn't have lungs and won't live for more than a few minutes outside of the womb. I mean, this is a really difficult thing that women face. And the right answer is, of course, to make sure that we trust people to make that decision, and people have the freedom to do that. We don't say big government's going to insert itself and tell them how to handle something that sadly really doesn't have a right answer.
So the governor of Colorado is telling you that the people of Colorado are more in line with North Korea, the regime in North Korea, are more in line with the Communist Party of China than they are with the citizens of Europe or Mississippi, or the vast majority of people in the United States of America. The people of the United States of America have voted, as pointed out by the Daily Wire's Matt Walsh, to make it illegal for someone to kill the egg of a bald eagle. You cannot do anything that causes this disturbance of a nest of our nation's symbol that results in the death of a baby bald eagle still in the egg. That would cause you to receive criminal punishment. Who knows how many different species and their young children are protected by the Environmental Protection Agency. But here in the United States of America, that is an acceptable proposition to hold. But to protect the unborn, to protect a child at the day he's to be born, is too radical for the Democratic Party? What a wild manipulation of language. What a wild place to arrive at in the script. And one can only ask why. If it's not a plea, if it's not knees on the ground and hands folded in prayer, don't hurt me, what is it? Well, it's in service of the plot. It's in service of agenda. Now I give you Congresswoman Katie Porter, who managed to tie together the two issues we've discussed, inflation and abortion. Listen to this evil.
As you're out there in California talking to constituents during this re-election year for Congress, how does inflation compare to this newly important, in the sense of the Supreme Court decision pending, abortion issue? How do those two issues compare?
Well, I don't think they compare. I think they actually reinforce each other. So the fact that things like inflation can happen and it can become more expensive to feed your kids and to fuel your car is exactly why people need to be able to be in charge of how many mouths they're going to have to feed. So I think the fact that we're seeing this jump in expenses, that we're seeing people having to pay more in the grocery store, pay more at the pump, pay more for housing, is a reason that people are saying, I need to be able to make my own decisions about when and if to start a family.
That is Katie Porter addressing, for what it's worth, the most important issue for Americans. No, it's not abortion. It's inflation. A new Pew Research poll says 83% of Americans believe inflation is extremely important. Dealing with inflation is a very serious problem. When you expand it beyond very serious problem to simply a problem, the numbers go above 90%. 92% of Americans believe inflation is the biggest problem facing our country. And there, using the script in service of the agenda, Congresswoman Porter marries inflation and abortion in the most heinous of ways. Hey, it's expensive out there. Gas is $5 a gallon. Inflation is through the roof. It's a lot of mouths to feed. Now more than ever, people should be able to decide how many people live under their roof. Now more than ever, you should be able to say, kids are too expensive, abort them. Man, I'd love to have an interview or a conversation with Congresswoman Katie Porter. I would love to ask, help me understand that rationale. Where is your line? After kids are born, by the way, they get very expensive, especially now when we're dealing with a nationwide supply crunch in baby formula. You can't find it. Prices are going up because of that supply crunch. Kids are super expensive. 6 months old are super expensive. It's a lot of mouths to feed. Should they be aborted? What about if you live in a bad school district and by the time they arrive at the age of 7, they need to go to a private school? That's a lot of money. Can you at that point go, I really can't afford private school. Abort them? Abort the 7-year-old? College is exceeding the rate of inflation. The cost of college is exceeding the rate of inflation. It's stupid. Sheer lunacy what we pay for college in service of indoctrination and brainwashing. It's incredibly expensive to send a kid to college. Should an alternative be to abort the 18-year-old? I'm just curious, Congressman Porter, if I follow your rationale, when your rationale not ceases to hold logic, but when it begins. Because let's be real. That is illogical and evil to have cross your mind, much less cross your lips. But it's in service of the plot. It's in service of the agenda. If there's a shooting, as there was this past weekend, where will the conversation go? To guns. If the conversation is over inflation, where does the conversation turn? To abortion. If the conversation is about inflation, where does the conversation turn? To the corporate tax rate. What am I talking about now? I'm talking about yet another tweet, another use of language, another flip of the script by the Biden administration to control the plot. President Joe Biden tweeted this past weekend, one of the best ways to get inflation under control would be to raise the corporate tax rate. Once again, drawing the criticism of Amazon's Jeff Bezos. What does the corporate tax rate have to do with inflation? Nothing. And even those who have funded Black Lives Matter, funded the most radical organizations on the left, like Jeff Bezos, know there is no connection between the corporate tax rate and inflation. And what all of us, including Jeff Bezos, should be able to see then is this is simply language manipulation, using the script to twist the plot to further the agenda. There's not a crisis that hasn't been used to further another item on an existing agenda, an agenda that includes gun control, open borders, higher taxes, corporate taxes, and easy, affordable, and encouraged abortion. Manipulate the language, control the script, twist the plot, advance the agenda.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Story number two. I wish I was transitioning into a happier moment. I wish I was transitioning to talk to you about sports. That will have to wait until tomorrow morning, until we decide, until we see whether or not this podcast was a precursor to agony or to ecstasy. Unfortunately, I turn now to yet another example of lunacy, but yet another example of lunacy that is oh so incredibly important. I bring you this story from the state of Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, at the Keel Middle School, three middle school boys were hit with a Title IX sexual harassment complaint for refusing to refer to a non-binary classmate by they, them pronouns. A non-binary classmate dictates the pronouns that must be used by he, she, they's other classmates. And if an eighth grader or a seventh grader or a sixth grader, I have a fifth grader in middle school, don't use the dictated pronouns, you will be charged, investigated, slapped with a Title IX sexual harassment complaint. One of the mothers involved told WLUK the following. She said, the school district has filed a Title IX complaint against the Keel Middle School students, accusing them of sexual harassment for using the incorrect pronouns. I received a phone call from the principal over at the elementary school forewarning me, letting me know that I was going to be receiving an email with sexual harassment allegations against my son, said Rosemary Rabideau, one of the parents of the students being accused. I immediately went into shock. Of course you would. I'm thinking, sexual harassment? That's rape. That's inappropriate touching. That's incest. What has my son done? Rabideau's 13-year-old son, who was an eighth grader, Braden, is one of the three eighth graders accused of sexual harassment. And the investigating principal said he's being allegedly charged with sexual harassment for not using proper pronouns, said Rabideau. I thought it wasn't real. I thought this was got to be a gag, a joke. One has nothing to do with the other. Title IX is federal law, which covers rape, dating violence, and quid pro quo sexual favors, forcing someone to return sexual favors in exchange for some type of incentive. Title IX is famously the federal law that brought in equity and or equality in women's sports. Title IX has largely been something that covers, for example, as well, allegations of date rape on college campuses. I've never heard of Title IX being applied to pronouns, and there's good reason for that, because it doesn't. It simply doesn't. This is beyond lunacy. This is, in my estimation, criminal. I'll tell you what I mean by that in just a moment. But the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, they issued a letter to the administrators of the Keel Area School District. They said school administrators can't force minor students to comply with their preferred mode of speaking, and they certainly shouldn't be slapping eighth graders with Title IX investigations for what amounts to protected speech. This is a terrible precedent to set with enormous ramifications. I would say so. What I would say is this is actually criminal, or at least worthy of exploration as to whether or not it is criminal. Let's start with this. It's unconstitutional. You can't tell someone words they can and cannot use. You cannot tell someone by the power of government what pronouns they must use with somebody else. It's unconstitutional. This doesn't get past go. There is no way the Keel School District knows about the foundational documents of the United States of America, the concept of free speech, or the United States Constitution. So the Keel School District is existing in some other astral plane, some other land of the lost. They're existing in the world where they have elevated pronouns to bullying. Let's talk about bullying. Is an eighth grader not using they, them with another eighth grader bullying? I wasn't there. Were they very mean about it? I mean, it's possible. I don't encourage anybody to be mean to somebody else, but I also don't think forcing someone else to change the English language is nice. If you walk around requiring everybody around you change the meaning of words, I think you're being mean. And who can do it? Is it only quote-unquote marginalized communities? Can I? I'm not transgender. I'm cis. That means my gender and my sex align. I don't presume anybody knows what these terms mean, cis. You shouldn't presume anyone knows what this faddish language actually means. But I'm cis. Can I say, hey, from now on, my pronouns are they, them? No, I'm a dude. I'm a he, him, but I want to be a they, them. So from now on, my pronouns are they, them. Can I do that? And can I walk around the hallways here at work? And anybody that doesn't, I can file federal complaints? I can re-enroll in school and file a Title IX investigation on anybody that refuses to use or mistakenly uses he, him with me? What are the parameters here? When are we allowed to make other people say what we want them to say? Can I call the Ministry of Truth? Will Nina Jankovic get on it? You know, Mary Poppins of disinformation? Will she get on it? When can I make people say what I want them to say? Because that's the modern day American fad. That's the real fad. It's not trans. The real fad is, how can I make you say what I want you to say? Bullying is a school administrator, a quote unquote adult with a government job, slapping a Title IX investigation on eighth graders. That's bullying. You, sir, are a bully. And you're a lot more than that, that I won't say on a broadcast platform. You're a lot more than that. Well, more, I think you should be fired. I think you should immediately lose your job. You should be scorned in public, by the way. Everyone should know who you are. You shouldn't be rehired by any school in America. If you think it's appropriate to slap a Title IX investigation onto an eighth grader who used the wrong pronouns, I don't even think you should be around children. We should probably consider whether or not we should set up perimeters around every school, and you're allowed within the perimeter. And finally, and even though I slept at a Holiday Inn and I do have a law degree, I'll defer to my lawyer friends out there. I'm interested in the concept of malicious prosecution if pushed forward. Can a school district employee be sued for malicious prosecution? Because this is worthless. It's unconstitutional. It's going nowhere. It's only been used to intimidate and bully a child. Can you be slapped with the tort? It's a tort. Malicious prosecution exists. So can a school administrator be guilty of malicious prosecution for flexing the power of the government on an eighth grader? I'm interested. I'm interested in a safe zone around schools from any administrator who helped push this forward. I'm interested in them being fired. I'm interested in forcing them to say what I want, which is learn the Constitution of the United States of America.
All right, we're going to step aside here for just a moment. Stay tuned.
Story number three. It was an absolutely tragic and abhorrent shooting in Buffalo, New York, this past Saturday. An 18-year-old young man from hours away drove to Buffalo and opened fire in a grocery store parking lot, shooting 13 people and murdering 11, most of whom were black. It was a racially motivated hate crime by all the information that we have available to us today, and we have a fair amount of evidence and information. This individual live streamed this heinous shooting onto Twitch and also left behind something like a 106-page manifesto professing racist beliefs and thoughts. This individual should be condemned. It won't be hard to convict. Should be investigated for deeper connections, who could and should have known. But this individual is not indicative, and it's the constant societal instinct to tie horrible, bad, condemnable actors onto your political adversaries. They're already out in force attacking this news channel, attacking Tucker Carlson, saying this individual liked or talked about replacement theory, something that's they accused Tucker Carlson of having talked about. This individual, in who knows what kind of loose ways, they're trying to talk or tie into the people they already do not like. Want some facts? Here are the facts as we know them today. This individual not only did not watch the Fox News channel, but had criticism for the Fox News channel, including being a racist. He was an anti-Semite and drew all kinds of anti-Semitic assumptions about the media, including this news channel. He frequented 4chan. He laid out his thoughts in this 106-page manifesto and how he got there. Said he wasn't born racist, wasn't raised racist, got bored during the pandemic, started researching on the internet, fell into 4chan, started looking at guys like Anders Breivik, who shot up a camp. Was it in Norway? The shooter in New Zealand, who shot up a mosque. Started getting entranced with this different stuff. Said he, when he was 12 years old, in his early age, he was a communist. He was in the far left. Then he said he started to drift to the right. Said he would call himself now on the authoritarian left, or perhaps a populist. That's how he described himself in his political philosophy. He was undoubtedly anti-Semitic, undoubtedly racist. And he shared those thoughts against immigration. Fighting for, in his warped mind, his race, his European ancestry, throughout these 106 pages. This is a person who indicts themselves but indicts nobody else. And only those political opponents who use the worst of tactics, who project onto those that disagree with them the worst of things that happen in society, which in my estimation makes them some of the worst actors in our political rhetoric, are the ones tying it to something larger today. We'll stay on top of this story as the details emerge. And if there is deeper and bigger lessons to draw, then we will do that here on the Will Cain Podcast, and we'll share facts. Man, you have enough hyperbolic hair pullers out there ready to do whatever it takes to burn down their opponent. You don't need that. Not our country doesn't need that. Not in a time like this. $40 billion. That's how much the United States government has voted to send to Ukraine, making total United States financial contribution to the war in Ukraine $53 billion. Brings up two interesting questions. How close are we getting to direct conflict with Russia? This is a story that was front and center in the news cycle in all of our minds for weeks, but it's been about 2 months. It's been about 10 weeks since this news story sort of faded into the background. It shouldn't, because many have said we are silently marching towards nuclear brinksmanship. We can't let this simply fade into the background, especially when we're funding it escalating. How close are we getting? If we're conducting a proxy war, and there's many representatives of the United States government who have said that openly now, Congressman Dan Crenshaw, Republican, has said we're essentially bleeding out Russia. What better way to diminish your opponent without ever sacrificing an American life than what's happening in Ukraine? That's from Congressman Dan Crenshaw, Republican. There are others, a Democratic politician, who said that this is essentially war. It's proxy war with Russia. So how long until Russia goes, huh, I guess we're at war with the United States of America? They're certainly funding our adversary. We might as well stop pretending and launch a war with the United States of America. Don't you think that's a worthy question for the American people to ask? I do. I don't think it's parroting Putin talking points to go, huh, $53 billion to the war in Ukraine. Could that possibly escalate into direct war with Russia? What more, is $53 billion to a war in Ukraine in service of American interest? That's, again, I think, not just a justifiable question, but a necessary question. Want to put that into context? That's three times the price of Trump's proposed border wall on the southern border of the United States of America. The $43 billion that was just allocated would be, on an annual basis, the 10th largest military in the world on its own, with just that budget of what we've devoted to Ukraine in 3 months' time. If annualized over the year, that would put us over South Korea, Italy, and Australia. That money, 10th largest military in the world. It's coming at a time, obviously, when there's stuff going on here. Inflation, the cost of gas, a shortage of baby formula, as Tucker Carlson has pointed out, an opioid crisis here in the United States of America. By the way, this is also bigger, much bigger, than the budget of the Drug Enforcement Agency here in the United States of America, the DEA. So is it the best use in America's interest to spend this kind of money on a war in Ukraine? Those are very, not just justifiable, but necessary questions. And I'll tell you what we'll do as we set the stage for the news cycle this week. We're going to have a conversation this week with Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, who was the lone senator to hold up this funding bill for the war in Ukraine, asking for an inspector general, asking for oversight, just fiscal responsibility on where all this money goes. Raytheon, the CIA, who knows what programs inside of Ukraine, just somebody to look at and go, where's all this $53 billion going to go? Rand Paul's held it up for the moment. We'll have Rand Paul here on the Will Cain Podcast this week and ask him why and what can be done, and does it serve America's interest? And between now and then, I ask for your prayers. It's just sports. It's not that big of a deal, but at least for the next 12 hours, it will feel like a very big deal to me. I can't help it. I'm a child. It's who I am. I'll be depressed. You'll see the depression on Fox and Friends on Monday morning. You can hear me, the pessimist inside me, steeling myself against that, I don't want to say inevitability, but potentiality. But on the other hand, if I wake up tomorrow morning and it stars in the second round and the Mavs in the Western Conference Finals, sports is great. And I'll see you next time on the Will Cain Podcast.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.